You have found Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggles, stories, and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Authentic Business Adventures can be found on Facebook as well as all over that fancy internet thing. We are coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Radio Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, business coach at Draw In Customers Business Coaching and author of the Bold Business Book, available on Amazon. Today, we're welcoming slash preparing to learn from Chandra Miller of Starting Block Madison. Chandra, how are you doing today?
I'm doing really well.
I am excited here because I go down East Washington and I see a huge building and I know that magic is happening in that building. So presuming you can probably tell us a little bit about that.
I can. So if you are heading down East Washington Avenue towards the Capitol and you see this big, beautiful building with this terracotta on the left side,
right?
That's the new Spark Building.
Nice.
And it's built by American Family Insurance. They're the owners of the building, but it's actually on the old Don Zimbrick lot. So it was a city-owned piece of property.
Sure.
They put a RFP out because they really wanted to activate the south side of East Washington Street for economic development.
Mm-hmm.
And the Starting Block Madison was a key part of doing that.
That's so crazy because I remember I've been in Madison, I don't know, 18 years, something like that. And I can remember East Washington just looking
empty.
Bad. It was just crummy looking dealer lots and stuff like that. And then I remember when I first got to Madison, there was this whole East Side, West Side battle for whatever reason.
Yep.
And I didn't understand it. But then you go down East Washington, I'm like, all right, this is kind of ugly. I get it. But now East Washington just had a rebirth in the past, let's call it 5-6 years.
Absolutely, with Breeze Stadium Field and the refurbishment of that and the new soccer professional soccer team that's going in.
Sure.
The Galaxy and the Constellation buildings were the first two buildings up.
Right.
And then we're actually part of a three-building development,
okay.
The Spark Building, which is, like I said, that's on the inside part of the East Washington Avenue in Livingston.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Gephardt Building, which is where the new 2,500 music music venue will open up later this fall, the Sylvie. And then behind that is a 650 public parking ramp. So first public parking ramp on the east side,
Nice.
Which will make things easy for the Starting Block tenants and community.
Awesome. That's awesome. So Starting Block, why don't you tell us what that is?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are a 50,000 square foot entrepreneurial hub.
That's a lot of space.
It is a lot of space. We have predominantly floors 2, 3, and 4 of the Spark Building. And our goal is to create a space where an entrepreneur that has a growing, scalable startup can grow his company or her company and focus in on the growth of the company without having to move office space every, 6 months as they add in 2, 3, 4 employees and these, companies that can really grow quickly.
Sure.
And so we wanted to be able to aggregate them together, allow them to learn from each other, learn from their peers above them and below them, but also then co-locate a bunch of resources that are there. To really make sure that they have, a lot of the resources that they need to succeed.
Sure. So then that begs the question, who's paying for it?
Well, we have a sustainable building, a business model for Starting Block. So what basically right now, startups are grabbing office space wherever they can find it. It's actually really hard to find appropriate small square footage office space.
Oh, it's insanely tough.
Right.
I can tell you from experience. Yeah, whether it exists or not, and then just from a cost standpoint.
Exactly.
It's insane.
Exactly. If you want to have 7,000 square feet for 10 years, you find that.
Yeah,
but if you're looking for, a 300 square foot office or a 1,000 square foot suite, it's really, really hard.
A lot of non-return phone calls with that message, right?
Exactly. And that's exactly what we offer.
Okay.
But we also offer, the conference rooms and the lounge spaces and the other opportunities, the meeting spaces. And so you can only rent exactly what you only have to rent exactly what your company needs at any given time. If you add people in, it's really flexible for you to be able to say, okay, well, you know what? We don't need to have our own private office.
Sure.
We've got a conference room or a phone booth room or some other space in order to have meetings and meet with investors.
Gotcha.
And
it does not have to be a 10-year lease.
It doesn't have to be a 10-year lease. In fact, we're really flexible. Our flex membership and our reserve desks, basically it's 30 days. You give me 30 days notice,
nice.
And that's absolutely fine. Some of our longer spaces is like 90 days.
Okay.
But again, I view my job is, look, if you have to leave either because something went sideways with your startup
or
something went really great and you just all of a sudden have to hire 20 new people and have to move out because things are going gangbusters, then it's my job to have a waiting list, be like, okay, no problem. We can move you out and move you in. And that's already in the 6 weeks that's been we've been open. That's already happened.
That's awesome.
Nice. We've had companies move in, companies move out, companies close, companies scale up. So my job is a game of Tetris.
Sure. That's awesome for the game of entrepreneurship, right?
Exactly.
That's coming and going, that's a super common thing.
Yep.
So how did you get involved with Starting Block?
So I've been involved in the project almost from the beginning. I've been working on it as a passion project with a group of other real committed volunteers for about 6 years now.
Okay. Did you say volunteer?
Yes.
You've been volunteering for Starting Block for over...
It's largely been a volunteer effort for our first years.
All right.
We had a group of committed volunteers, visionaries, leaders, a couple of people that were doing this as part of their other jobs that came together to really assess what the needs were, understand who our collaborators were, find our partners, fundraise to get this off the ground.
Sure.
And then we broke ground, and that included the city of Madison. They were really early supporters, the city of Madison and the state of Wisconsin.
Okay.
But we broke ground with American Family Insurance January of 2017, and we opened up in June of 2018.
Dang, that's crazy.
So when we got going fast.
Nice. That's all right. That's good, because then you can teach other entrepreneurs how to do that as well, I imagine, right?
Yeah.
The whole goal.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, sorry, I forgot. I didn't really answer your question with respect to what is our business model.
Yeah.
So if you think about our tenants, they would otherwise be paying rent if they could find a space.
Sure.
Right? They would be paying rent, and they would be paying rent to a commercial landlord.
Right.
What happens for us is they pay their rent, but they pay their rent to Starting Block Madison. We in turn take that rent and use it as our revenue to support our operations and the programming that gives back right back into the community. So I like to think of it as like it's a perpetual motion machine.
Sure.
And they see their rent check converted into programming, converted into pizza, converted into networking and support.
Interesting.
And so there's a multiplier effect.
All right. I imagine coffee is involved there somewhere.
There is a lot of coffee involved.
Nice. That's awesome. And so from a pricing standpoint, I guess without talking specific numbers or anything, is it, I feel like the cost per square foot of most office space in and around Madison is higher than it should be, considering how much empty office space there is. So is it on par with that kind of thing?
Or we try to be at market or a little bit below market.
Gotcha.
You know, to maintain that flexibility. It's not subsidized rent, though.
Okay.
But if you think about what it is that you get, so instead of having a 300 square foot office, but then you also have the conference room space or the a private office space. At Starting Block, you can just rent what you need and then use the other shared resources that are available. So you save a lot of money that way. We like to be the best deal in town.
Right, that's fair. Plus, I imagine you're talking with other entrepreneurs, so just the crowd effect in that regard.
Exactly. We want people out and about and, you know, in the hallways. And that's the fun thing about it. It's all about creating intersections.
Sure. That's awesome. So I did a little research now. You're an attorney, right? You were an attorney.
I was an attorney.
How did
you? Yes, I'm a recovering attorney. There's a lot of recovering attorneys in the entrepreneurial world.
That's
so
fair.
I'm in
That's
good
fair.
Company.
So how did you go from entrepreneur to running the Starting Block?
Well, so actually, when I was an attorney, I represented a very famous investment banker, and he was one of my clients. And I actually started one day, I had the revelation that I think that the entrepreneurs are having more fun than the litigators are.
Hope so.
And so I knew that I wanted to do something different. So that's when I decided that I wanted to make a pivot into entrepreneurship.
All right.
So worked with the Department of Commerce for a while, did economic development policy on policy, state policies to support entrepreneurship.
Oh,
like
really?
The Qualified New Business Venture Program, for example. Then I went off and I co-founded my own company that was based in Boston with two scientific co-founders.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then when I came back to Madison, I was really, you know, wanted to do something. I'd been in San Francisco. I'd seen what the opportunities were in Boston, two hubs of entrepreneurship activity. And I thought, along with this group of, you know, this planning committee and this group of visionaries, we saw that Madison had all the ingredients. It just needed some connective tissue. It needed a collaborator group. And so that's what we started working on.
That's interesting you mentioned Boston. I was just there a couple of years ago. A buddy and I went there just for the history, and I was surprised at all this entrepreneurship stuff that was going on there. And it made me think, like, is this happening in every city, or is this just specific locales? It was so surprising, because you end up going down that rabbit hole.
I think there's a lot of cities that are interested in and should be interested in focusing on cultivating their own entrepreneurs. We know that most new jobs come from early ventures, new ventures. That's when you get your jobs. And those jobs have a tendency to stay in your city and your town. So I think there's an opportunity, no matter what size town you have or city that you have, is that we should be thinking about how to cultivate the entrepreneurs that are in those towns.
Sure.
But then Madison has some things that really you know, we have the opportunity to be at, you know, a second tier city for entrepreneurship, to really be nationally known in the same way that Austin and Denver are.
Sure.
And we just, you know, with the, our world-class university, the quality of living, the tech talent that we have in here, our brand of a good place to live. Madison has everything that we need to really elevate us and become a nationally known for startups, for entrepreneurship, and for innovation.
Sure. When you say second tier, what do you mean there?
I mean, we're never going to be San Francisco, Silicon Valley, and New York.
Are they the only first tier?
Yeah, pretty much in my world.
Okay.
I mean, you know, 98% of venture capital is either in New York or Silicon Valley.
Sure.
Right? So
sure.
Everyone else is in the 2%.
Gotcha. Okay. That's still a lot.
I mean, everybody. That includes Chicago, Denver.
Sure.
So.
Gotcha. Okay. So you, it sounds like you like what you do.
I do.
All right. What are some of the favorite things about what you do?
Oh, well, it's one of the things that I like about working with entrepreneurs generally is that they're problem solvers.
Ah, fair.
Every entrepreneur is a problem solver because if you think about it, it starts with the identification of a problem, right? And then most people like to run away from problems. They're not things that we like, they're things that we have to deal with. But what I like about the entrepreneur mentality is they like to run at problems. They like to look at them, turn them around, investigate them from different angles, talk to other people about how they would solve them, and then find a solution.
Right.
And it's just a great place to go to work every day with everybody solving different problems, but working on solving problems.
It's so funny that you say that, because I get people coming up to me and they're like, James, you're doing all this stuff, like, can't keep track of it, whatever. And I thought I would just get a business card that says I fix things. Maybe that would put it all in perspective. But that's, so it's funny that you say that, because entrepreneurs, that's what they do.
That's what we do,
right?
Yep.
That's
so
awesome.
I'm running around fixing a bunch of problems right now.
Nice. For other entrepreneurs, but I imagine you got a lot of moving parts.
We have a lot of moving parts.
Because you're talking, you're involved with city, I mean, the sponsors and all that jazz, the entrepreneurs themselves. I imagine investors.
Absolutely. Investors, plus it's a new community. So making introductions, understanding, you know, what our tenants need, what the community needs, starting up brand new programming, and just cultivating a community to get going.
Okay.
Over the course of the summer. This week hits Forward Fest. So that's a big 8-day activity or a conference that we have. So that's a lot of work and a lot of fun.
Sure.
And a lot of opportunity. I think that, you know, people who have been checked out over the summer on summer vacation, it's a great opportunity for them to come and see what's happening at Starting Block. We've got all the furniture moved in and things like that.
Oh, nice. Sure.
We're ready for company.
Nice. Come.
And then school starts and we're into the middle of the semester. And then technically, you know, we have our grand opening first week in October. So.
Oh, it hasn't happened yet. Okay.
Well, we had a soft opening in June.
Gotcha.
And then grand opening is when, like I said, we're part of a three building development. Mm-hmm. So the parking ramp is still under construction. The Gephardt building is still under construction. Mm-hmm. There's still things going on in the Spark. We were the first ones to move in.
Sure.
So by the early October, most of those other pieces will be ready.
Gotcha.
And so people will be able to come and see the Spark building and see all the pieces of that community, not just the Starting Block.
Gotcha. Moment. That's awesome. All right. So not so many hard hats rolling around there
October. We're definitely out of hard hat phase. Okay. Yep, exactly. Nice. So
why don't you describe for us just a typical day that you have to deal with? Is there, presuming there is a typical, that's a huge presumption, right?
I don't really have a typical day.
Okay.
But, you know, if you come into Starting Block, we try to be this place that's open and inclusive for all sorts of entrepreneurs. So if you come to the Spark building, you'll see this glass door that is there. And if you walk up the stairs, you'll actually see our offices behind a glass wall. We wanted to be really accessible to people. So starting at about 8:00 in the morning, there's people walking in saying, hey, can you want to grab a cup of coffee? Can we talk? I'm running into this problem.
Sure.
My colleague at Starting Block, we have also on staff, we have an entrepreneur in resident, Scott Resnick. So it's a lot of times of, is this an appropriate person to say, hey, you should set up a meeting with our entrepreneur in residence. He can help you with some specific things, some mentoring, some connections as well. Sometimes it's a talent related problem. So a lot of entrepreneurs, you know, when they're past their initial founding team and they've got a little bit of seed money that might be ready to hire that first or second employee.
Ah, big move.
It's a big move and it's a risky move for entrepreneurs.
Oh, definitely.
Right?
Because now you're responsible for somebody else.
You're responsible for somebody else. That first couple of employees really makes a difference as to what your team looks like, what investors are going to view from your team. Mm-hmm. If you don't pick right, it can derail you.
Sure.
Your investors might not like that first employee, and, sure. and you have to move from a founder to, you know, to a boss.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a director of talent on Starting Block staff that can actually help you, walk you through, look at your job description, make sure you understand, you know, is this how you want to compensate them? Is it a combination of equity and cash
sure.
payment? You know,
mm-hmm.
those things are really different for a startup than they are for an established business.
Sure.
And then help you actually go out and find talent, mm-hmm. get them to say yes to you.
Yeah, that's tough for everybody now.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So those are some things on a typical day that we're working. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's, you know, how do I get a conference room? I want to do this type of programming. We have lots of programming that goes on at Starting Block, both mm-hmm. things that are being hosted by the Starting Block team, but also by our founding and our partner organizations do
sure.
a lot of programming as
yeah,
well.
Generator, I've gone to a few events there.
Generator does a lot of events.
It blew my mind how awesome they were.
They're awesome,
like,
aren't they?
How is this room not filled up with 500 people? So it's information, it's fast, and just it's what you need. There's no fluff or sales pitch or anything.
No, absolutely. They give entrepreneurs what they need when mm-hmm. they need it, and in a really, you know, sort of digestible bite-sized pieces, and
mm-hmm.
you can kind of come back and find what you need next.
Right.
And one of the other really great things about Generator is, you know, they become sort of national. They're a nationally ranked accelerator program.
Okay.
So they're one of the best of the best.
Sure.
And they're also in 7 locations now. And so they help connect Madison and our Madison entrepreneurs regionally, because they're also in Northeast Wisconsin, Milwaukee, Cincinnati, Indianapolis, Detroit, and Minneapolis.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So we can start to see, as you start to move out, if you need a customer base or mm-hmm. an investor, that there's not one here in Madison or another connection,
mm-hmm.
they're a great resource like Starting Block to be able to say, okay, I need somebody in Cincinnati. Can you help?
Sure. Oh, that's awesome. So Starting Block itself, is that for-profit or non-profit?
We're a 501c3 non-profit charitable organization.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yep.
All right. And what else can you tell us about Starting Block? I guess, are there certain entrepreneurs that you look for, types of businesses or things of that nature?
Yeah. So we are an IT center of excellence for the state of Wisconsin,
okay.
Which means that we are focused in on the IT sector.
Okay.
But that means we're sort of tech focused, not tech exclusive. So we have a wide variety of companies that,
mm-hmm.
that are different types of tech companies. For example, we have Image Mover MD. They are a healthcare IT company.
Okay.
So they're sort of doing Snapchat for doctors and able
gotcha.
To take a picture
mm-hmm.
in a diagnosis situation or an emergency room situation. And then they help get that into the electronic medical records process, right?
Okay.
So you get that photograph in there. So
mm-hmm.
healthcare IT company. We have Arch Virtual, which is a VR company. We used to work actually with buildings, and they came out of an architectural space. Now they're moving into VR for medical
Oh,
aspect.
Interesting.
So
okay.
You can put their goggles on and learn how to suture a leg or fix a spine.
All right.
Safety protocols. We have Blue Diagnostic, which is a medical diagnostics company.
Okay.
We have Markable AI, which is an artificial intelligence company that's in the fashion space.
Okay.
We have Soha Diamonds, which is a e-commerce company, and lab-grown diamonds, which is sort of taking off right now. This difference between lab-grown and mined
sure.
diamonds and ethical
I
diamonds.
I wouldn't know the difference between that and glass, so it's all right.
We have Loom, which is just about to do their launch on Friday night, and they are a social media platform for unsigned artists.
Okay.
So sort of Spotify, but if you're unsigned, and allows the fans of the unsigned artists, those early adopters,
sure.
to engage in a social media platform that allows you to help promote the new unsigned artists that you like.
Sure.
Sort of get them out there and get them up to that next stage.
Interesting.
As well.
So you don't have to listen to the same 5 songs on the radio. Right?
That's right. That's right. So that's just kind of an example of some of the companies.
Gotcha. Okay. So it sounds like a lot of software, or mainly software, with a little bit of healthcare and
software IT, healthcare IT, yeah, in that space.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yep.
So manufacturing, not so much because they need more space.
Most manufacturings need different types of space, but sometimes, you know, we cross paths. We've had, you know, we have like wearable technologies sometimes in our space, or IoT companies as well. So sometimes the IT tech company has a little bit of a physical manufacturing component as well.
Sure. Interesting. Okay. And I imagine on top of the space itself, you must help connect people.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Sometimes
I
don't get to sit down because I'm walking the space nice. making introductions.
Punks like me are coming around saying, hey, get on the show. Tell us about the world. That's awesome. So I'm just thinking, like, this has got to be just a hotbed for ideas and collaboration going back and forth. Because I'm guessing that most of your, I don't know, would you call them renters?
I say community members.
Okay, most of your community members.
Yeah, we're not that transactional. We're invested in our community okay. members. So we don't think of them just as a source of profit.
Sure.
And I certainly don't think of ourselves as a commercial landlord. That's not what we do. We're
sure,
community
sure.
community builders.
Right, right, right. That's fair. That's fair. Totally fair. So I imagine most of the entrepreneurs are younger.
They are not necessarily younger.
Not necessarily.
No,
okay.
We've got like the Loom company that I was mm-hmm. just talking about. They are definitely a young group. They're
okay.
just graduates of the UW-Madison in the CS department, in the business department. In fact, a few of them have not quite graduated yet.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So they're on the young side, but then, you know, there's entrepreneurs that are in their 30s and 40s and 50s at Starting Block as well. So it's not designed for just one type of entrepreneur.
Sure.
I think it's going to be the most vibrant,
mm-hmm.
If we have entrepreneurs of different types and different
sure.
backgrounds, all talking to each other and helping each other
mm-hmm.
along.
Yeah. I think that's interesting you say that, right? Because I started my first business 2006 where I was punk, just a young punk, right? And I think, what did I know? What did I not know? And what was I not even aware of in regards to existing, right? You mentioned employees.
Absolutely.
I thought employees were going to be so easy. You just find them, you pay them, they do the job and move along. And that's not the case, as you know, right?
No, definitely
employees
not.
Employees come with baggage and all this jazz. I had no idea. So I remember when I first got my, when I first hired my first employee, I remember they didn't show up. And I was like, I don't know what to do here. Like they didn't call, they didn't email. Back then text wasn't really a thing. I'm like, do I call them? Like, how is this a thing? I feel like somebody didn't show up to their own mom's funeral. And it just blew my mind that that was even an option in somebody's world.
Right.
And because I had no experience and I didn't really have anyone that I was aware to talk to because I didn't even know this was a thing. It would have been cool to be in a space like yours where I could just peek over the cubicle and be like, hey, what do I do? This person didn't show up.
Exactly.
And they could tell me, oh, yeah, that's totally a thing. There are people that just won't show up for whatever reason.
Right,
so
right.
So it's little things like that that I imagine from a community point of view is on the verge of priceless.
Absolutely. Is absolutely. That- it's particularly important with startups, particularly in these high growth startups, because mm-hmm. your company can change drastically in 3 months.
Oh, I bet.
And then again in 3 months. And so mm-hmm. you have to make sure that you've got the right team that mm-hmm. is comfortable and all rowing in the same direction and moving from a core group of founders that, okay, this is our baby, this is our dream, this is what we want to do, through those pivots and then mm-hmm. getting your next team, your group of your first employees to get on that, on the boat, row in the same direction, understand the way you all work.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to change once you onboard those
sure.
first employees with
dramatically,
the entrepreneurs.
Sure.
Dramatically. That's right. And then they've got to be ready for the changes. Okay, if we succeed, now we got to hire another 6 or
mm-hmm.
another 12.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got to kind of give your job away if you're going to continue to move up with leadership.
Sure.
And always take on that next new challenge. It may not be what you were hired to do at all.
Right.
Right? You'd be like, I was hired to do sales, but now I built a sales team and that sales team is going to go off and do sales. And
sure.
I'm invested in this company and I've got a bunch of skill sets and now I'm going to go off and I'm going to work on the next big project that
mm-hmm.
they need us to do.
Sure. So you've seen a lot of businesses come and go, even in the past 6 weeks and the past 6 years, I imagine, from working through this, right?
Failure is a part of entrepreneurship, and we just have to talk about it. It
sure.
does not mean the people fail or
mm-hmm.
the entrepreneurs fail just because the startup fails.
Oh, well, not at all. No, no,
being
no.
Being a startup
I was,
is risky.
Yeah.
yeah.
I tell
so
people
we see
you
them
either,
come and go.
Right. You either
Absolutely.
Learn or you succeed, right? It's just education. Chalk it up and move on. So in seeing that, is there a business that you can say like, oh, I should start this right now? Or somebody should start this, and it would not that it would be a guaranteed success, but you can see the market is pointing towards something like this.
Oh gosh, you know, not like not one. I mean, I think here in Madison,
mm-hmm.
we have a lot of innovation that's coming out of the university that we can
mm-hmm.
do better
Ton,
at
sure.
Moving them to market faster, right?
Oh,
so
interesting.
We already have a lot of great ideas that
okay.
are marketable, that have big markets.
Sure.
But getting those into the customer and into the marketplace faster is
mm-hmm.
an area that I think we would focus in on.
So is the limitation the people that are starting it, or is it laws, or what's the limitation there? the first hurdle?
I think it's changing, but I fundamentally, historically, Madison has been a place for really great, smart thinkers.
Mm-hmm.
But we are also a place that is led by government,
mm-hmm.
university,
mm-hmm.
healthcare.
Sure.
Those are not the most nimble sectors.
Arguably the worst.
And so I think we have to row against the tide of those already established and well-established bureaucracies and institutions mm-hmm. To learn how to be more nimble.
Sure.
And I think that that's a role that Starting Block can play.
Gotcha.
Is how quickly can you test something?
Mm-hmm.
How fast can you build an MVP? How would a group of researchers at the university and a group of entrepreneurs build a company together?
Mm-hmm.
Different from how a bunch of researchers, where they might be thinking about, how do I get the next grant, right?
Sure.
Where entrepreneurs be thinking, okay, I think we're far enough along. Let's mm-hmm. go find some customers.
Sure. How can we make money from this kind of thing? Or is it even viable?
Well, and how do we test it in the real marketplace?
Sure.
Sometimes what grant writers want as the next step of phase of development is not what the market needs.
Ah, fair.
Right?
Okay.
So how do you, as you move your development along, even if you're using grant money or federal, mm-hmm. SBIR money or, SBIT money, how do you make sure that you're staying true
mm-hmm.
so that you know what your customers want, you know what your price
sure.
point wants, you know what that next
sure.
piece
that
of
sounds like that can
is.
Be a tough road to navigate sometimes.
Can be.
Because you're trying to please quite a few different people.
It can be.
At the same time.
Yep.
I guess
it
that's the nature of every relationship in the world.
Yeah,
in the case of this, when you get money involved, then it's a different story.
Right.
Or a stronger story. It's interesting. Where do you see Starting Block or yourself going in 3 years?
Well, I hope we're bursting at the seams in 3 years.
Okay.
I hope that we have, a community that's engaged
mm-hmm.
At Starting Block. And for us, it's not just the companies that physically have space in Starting Block. Our community is entrepreneurs that
mm-hmm.
might be coming to programming, but never have space at Starting Block, but understand that this is a place for resources for them, for
sure.
connections for them.
Mm-hmm.
Entrepreneurs and companies that have left Starting Block because they outgrew our space.
Sure.
They fledged out of Starting Block,
right.
but are still actively engaged and coming back. And now they're serving as mentors or they're serving as finding that next level of peers in the space.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to have Starting Block be constantly busy, filled with people, established corporations, business leaders who understand the potential of the startup community
sure.
to Madison's future.
Mm-hmm. So do you see yourself in that picture as well?
I'm here for the foreseeable future.
I will hold you to it, right? Just no promises or anything. Like, you said. Right?
3 years is a long time.
3 years is
a very long time in the startup world. So.
Oh, it's a crazy long time.
Absolutely.
So would you consider starting your own business again?
I might. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, fundamentally, I'm an entrepreneur at heart.
Right.
So
I imagine that's why you do what you do, right?
I do.
So what would you start? I won't hold you to this either. I'm just super curious about stuff like this, right?
No, I'm not going to tell you and all of your listeners. Then somebody else will start it while I'm off working.
You know,
on
people say that, this is funny that you say that, right? And I told to get it in all seriousness, but I teach this business planning class at WIBIC, and you'll get 20 odd people in this class, right? And I'll ask them first day if they could just go around the room, say your name, what kind of business that you're starting. And there's always that one person's like, I can't tell you what I'm starting.
Oh, no, no, no.
And I'm like, I guarantee you that you could tell us, you know what, I'm just going to walk 5 feet that direction. There's a pot of money there. I'm just going to grab it. That's going to be my business model. Nobody will stand up because they all have so much to worry about with their own business that they're thinking of starting that you could tell them the secret to life. And they're so focused. It doesn't matter. So I tell them this is a safe place, right? No one's going to steal your idea.
You know, it's you're absolutely right. And it's more than that, because when you're an entrepreneur, particularly if you're in this growth space and
mm-hmm.
you're going to go out and you're going to try to get angel investors
sure.
and VCs to support you,
mm-hmm.
you talk about your company all the time. You talk about the problem that you're solving. You talk about your market. You talk about your business plan.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be confident enough in your solution.
Hugely.
Right?
Huge.
And your implementation and your team,
mm-hmm.
you can't keep everything behind behind a door in that isolated space.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that that's the reason why we built Starting Block, is because
sure.
there's a benefit to the intersections and talking about it
mm-hmm.
and coming across problems
sure.
Together as a community.
Mm-hmm.
So absolutely. I'm all for giving away the special sauce, talking. Sure. You know, there are times to keep certain things secret.
Certainly.
And, you know, certainly to understand what a trade secret is, right, and, you know, what's patentable. You know, definitely there's IP that can be protected in certain
definitely
types of startups.
Yep.
So also, you know, don't give away your special sauce if it's really important.
Right. But in the end, just you could say, hey, man, I'm making a soda, instead of like, here's the ingredients for my soda or whatever it is. Right. It was an interesting. I remember the first time that I had people that were concerned about that. And I think the first woman, I think, that challenged it, I think she was just doing a hair salon or something like, you're cool. No one's going to take that from you.
It's particularly true in the IT space where it's when you're talking about building software.
Sure.
Programming.
Sure.
Versus areas that have a little bit more of patent protection when they rely on other patent.
Gotcha.
Trade secrets.
Gotcha.
Just from an intellectual property standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So speaking of software and stuff like that, I look, S&P 500 is changing to be mostly techs and all that jazz.
Yep.
You and I both lived through the tech bubble of the early 2000s, right?
We did.
And we were old enough to know what that means.
Yep.
And actually invest in it, probably. Do you see us heading that direction again, or where do you see that? Or is that a challenge that people are concerned with?
I think bubbles are always a challenge.
Okay.
I mean, that's something that we need to be cognizant about. But in reality, like I said, you know, in the VC space,
mm-hmm,
most of the capital investment is in California and New York.
Sure.
So that's where bubbles are going to form.
Okay.
Here in the Midwest, we use, our companies are good value companies.
Okay.
We do more, we build more, and we build more value into an early stage startup with less money. And
okay,
so I think that even if there's, you know, a bubble, we're going to be that single family house,
sure,
that people still want to invest in. There's,
gotcha,
value here that I hope protects us from some of the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And also a lot of the investors and the angels are here locally as well.
Sure.
And so they're not out there necessarily competing with Silicon Valley companies, and they're,
sure,
investing in Silicon Valley. There's some of that. And I think that cross-fertilization is really important.
Mm-hmm.
But they're really looking for homegrown talent, homegrown innovation.
Okay.
And to build their money and to provide mentorship and provide strategic leadership.
Sure.
Here in Madison and regionally.
Okay. So moving on to investors now. The investor thing, I'm always curious about. I've never actually had to deal with that, so I don't know if that's good or bad. I always wonder, how involved do investors get when you're talking about an investment group versus an individual, right? Like the rich aunt or rich uncle, something like that. You're talking about groups.
Sure.
Companies that are formed specifically to invest in companies.
So it depends on what type of investors you have. So
okay,
a lot of times we talk about, you know, friends and family. So those will,
mm-hmm,
be really early,
sure,
friends and family seed, at early stage. And so,
mm-hmm,
they might give you $5,000, $10,000 to,
right,
get going.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually somebody that the entrepreneur knows personally.
Mm-hmm.
And then you move into angels, which,
mm-hmm,
are accredited investors. And so they have to have more wealth.
Okay.
And they're not professional investors, but often they work with in networks,
okay,
to bring deal flow to them.
Okay.
But they're still investing in, you know, $200,000, so fairly small.
Okay.
Rounds, and then you get up into the early stage seed rounds, and,
mm-hmm,
so, you know, these numbers aren't perfect, but you can have angels that do a little bit more. VCs that do small seed rounds,
okay,
as well. And then you get into those Series A, Series B, Series C rounds with,
sure,
professional venture capitalists.
Gotcha. And so let's just say I start this tech company, right? I'm going to be the magic software widget 101, whatever it is. I get some money from my relatives,
mm-hmm,
and then I get some angel investment. Then I've seen some psycho numbers to me when there's like, oh, we raised $250 million or $25 million, whatever it is. My first thought is, what are you doing with $25 million for a software company?
Well, they're growing.
Okay.
Right?
So is it employees? Is it marketing?
Yeah,
is it sales?
It's development. It's sales. It really depends on the nature of the company.
Okay.
Yeah,
it seems
absolutely.
Like $25 million. That's a fancy ping pong table.
Well, there's not a lot of $25 million
okay.
companies here in Madison.
Fair. But even if it was a $5 million company, I think that's a lot of payroll in my world. So I don't know, maybe software is a different story.
But if you're going to scale,
mm-hmm.
right, and you're gonna sell, and then you're gonna develop,
okay,
and you're paying, you know, developers at a market rate at $80,000, so
sure.
You know, payroll is a big component of it.
Okay,
building the company, you know, moving into sales,
mm-hmm.
In that aspect, yeah, it can be really expensive.
So does it cover advertising and things like that, or do they govern what it covers?
Not You mean what your your investors govern what you're going to spend.
They do.
On.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if it's just like, here's $5 million or whatever. We're pretty sure you know what to do.
No, investors are generally investing time and talent and leadership.
These are so people, it's more than just dollars.
Exactly. Okay. They want you to succeed. So it isn't as though they write a check and walk away.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, often they write a check and then they're on your board and they want you to succeed. And they're making connections to you, to the next investor. Often, you know, they're the ones that are finding the next series of investor.
Oh, interesting.
It'll be outside of, we, you know, for example, this one VCA says, okay, we do seed, right? So we can go up to this amount of money.
Okay.
But then they want you to get into a Series B round.
Sure.
Well, they're going to need to introduce you to VCs that can do that. Okay, well, now we're in the $25 million or the $10 million range.
Sure.
So they want to get you into that successful space because then the valuation increases and that's how they make their money.
And, okay.
And, you know, you want to keep increasing the valuation of the startup company at every round.
Can you talk a little bit about how they make money? Like,
how does a VC make money?
Yeah. Is it when the business is sold?
Sure. We call it when there's an exit.
Okay.
So typically it can be an IPO, which is an initial public offering.
All right.
That's happening less and less these days.
I would say
It's very expensive to get to an IPO space. So it's usually an acquisition.
Okay.
So then you would have a whole nother company buy the startup, right? So acquire the company. And then that's where the funds would come to exit your previous investors.
Gotcha. Okay. And is the idea, I feel like there's so many businesses being started and that are funded that it's almost to the point where a lot of these, the model's kind of been proven? Where are there a lot of companies that are being formed that actually work on acquiring companies instead of necessarily investing in them?
There's a lot of companies who... Okay. acquire companies. And
gotcha.
We see, you probably don't hear about them as much because they're small. They can be acquired for, you know, $1 million.
Sure.
And then they get absorbed. And
you
might not necessarily know that there's been an acquisition. You read it in the paper, but the company might not change names. It just now might be owned by a UK company or a Canadian company or a US company. And so they have deeper pockets to continue on to the development stage, usually in a complementary space. I mean, there's a reason why a company acquires another company.
Gotcha. Okay. Microsoft buying Yahoo. That might be a bad example, but things like that.
Right.
That's a terrible example.
Usually it's a company that sees, we would use this, we would implement it, or there's a strategic reason why we want to capture that solution just for us
because
it gives us some edge in the marketplace.
Okay.
So we don't want this startup selling it to all of the industry. We want to have it bring it in-house as an in-house competitive advantage.
Okay. Awesome. Interesting. So let's downshift into failures.
Sure.
Because I'm sure you see a lot. What are some of the, I don't know if you can share stories of some of the either biggest mistakes people have made or some of the blunders that you've seen. You don't even necessarily have to mention names or anything like that, but it's always a curiosity. Because a lot of times you see the pretty package, but you don't see what actually happens behind the scenes kind of thing.
Sure. A lot of times it's unrealistic expectations from the founders is the amount of work it's going to entail, the time it's going to entail.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have a team of three and one founder will move away. Not stay invested in the company, and then all of a sudden there's a hole. They might lose their developer, for example. If they started out with a business side team, a sales team, and a developer, and then the developer leaves.
That's a big deal. Okay.
And the company is not yet at a stage where they have enough money to hire a development team.
Okay.
Or even if they can hire a development team, they've lost their developer as the manager of the development. And products get delayed, products don't work the way they want to. So that's a risk for a really lean, early stage startup company.
Okay.
We already talked about hiring. Hiring can be a risk.
Huge.
You hire somebody and they don't have the skill set that you think that they have, or they don't work with the team, and then you have to fire them and then rehire. So the hiring process can take, even in a short term, it can take 8 weeks or longer, and that can be
harder. I was going to say 8 weeks, man. That's short in my world.
I wish it was faster. You're moving really fast. That's right. And in Madison, we have a really tight labor market. So if you're looking for high quality talent and you're a early risky startup company,
you got a problem.
You got to look hard and you got to pick carefully.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an area that happens.
Sure.
Obviously, lack of capital, just the inability to find investors that are interested in your product, that, that believe in your company. The inability to sort of scale up to that next stage of customers or outside of, okay, great, you got one or two customers that are here in the Madison region.
Sure.
How do you get into Chicago? How do you get into Minneapolis? Where's that next ability to grow your revenue, find your next customer base is something that we see startups here struggling with. Or maybe in the other, to put it in a more positive light, things in which Starting Block hopes we can help startups.
That's fair. Totally fair. Awesome. That's so interesting. I have 50 million questions here. I'm trying to think which way to go. The entrepreneurship thing is so much fun. And then you start talking crazy numbers. And it's interesting when I think of when I first started my business, it was never even on the docket for coming up with a software company, which apparently I didn't have my ear to the ground at all. I just made this laundry list of what am I good at? What do I think I can make money at? Blah, 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 blah. Coding was not in there, and internet was barely a decade old, which that seems like a long time now, but like this was dial-up internet. So,
well, entrepreneurs still, I mean, I know we talk about, you know, the really successful entrepreneurs that, you know, are worth millions and billions of dollars, but the vast majority of entrepreneurs, they do it because they have to do it. They do it because it's what gets up in the morning and keeps them up at night. It's because that's what they love to do.
Right.
They're not doing it for the money.
In fact,
most of them are doing it for a lack of money.
Sure,
right,
totally
now.
Fair.
You're right. Which is great.
Well, that's surprising to me. Not that you say that, but just I've learned that from my business coaching practice. When you start talking about numbers with people, and you're like, you've been in business how long? And you're barely scraping by. You have multiple decades. How have you been doing this? And you understand that it's just a passion for them. And I'm like, well, there's passion, and then there's still being able to pay your mortgage, and you kind of want those to go hand in hand a little bit.
It's hard. Yeah, it's really hard to be an entrepreneur. I think some people say, well, why are there not more entrepreneurs of color and women entrepreneurs? And we absolutely, you know, want to work to diversify and widen the pipeline of entrepreneurs. But, you know, let's talk about it. Quite frankly, there's a certain segment of our population that have the resources that they can go off on a boondoggle and be an entrepreneur a little bit easier.
Sure.
Than, you know, young parents who are at home that might not have the resources to be able to say, yeah, I'm going to like take 3 years off and maybe get paid and maybe not get paid at the end of that. Not everybody has, they may be the best entrepreneur. They may have the greatest idea. They may have all the skill sets that they need, but they're just not able to commit the resources towards their project way that some young, more wealthy, segments of our population can do. And I think as a community, we should be thinking about what can we do to encourage those entrepreneurs as well. Because that's where I think it's one of the reasons why immigrants make great entrepreneurs.
They do.
They make, you know, they're some of our most successful entrepreneurs that come from our immigrant communities as well. So I think that, you know, as a community, we need to be thinking about how we can widen the pipeline and support entrepreneurs that have great ideas.
Sure.
Not just based on how much their parents make or how much, you know, personal wealth that they have.
Fix healthcare. Watch it explode. I don't know if we can solve that now, but that's of all the things that would have prevented myself or has prevented, currently does prevent a lot of people from starting their own business.
Absolutely.
At least from jumping in with both feet.
Yep.
You know, they always are like, oh, I'll dabble with it while I keep my other job that has benefits.
That has benefits.
I mean, then you got a challenge there because there's only so many hours in a day.
Yep.
Your brain can only handle making so many decisions in a day, at least good decisions in a day. It's just, that's a challenge, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So that's, I feel like we as a country should solve that. But then I just wonder, holy cow, we'll need like 75 starting blocks in Madison alone if we solve that. Because how many people is that holding back?
I would like to have 75 starting blocks in Madison. That would be fantastic.
You'd be even busier then, right? We're going to need more coffee. Do you have a favorite customer story or customer community member story in Starting Block?
Well, I wouldn't say that I would have a favorite one, but this is one that I personally like because, like we were talking about, just solving problems and the enthusiasm for Starting Block coming onto the community. So, you know, we've been saying, okay, we're going to open, and then things got a little bit delayed. They were outside of our fault, you know, so we were going to open in on this date and this date and this date. And finally, you know, we set out to, okay, we are opening in on June. We were getting occupancy in the beginning of June. We're going to open at the end of June.
Sure.
So I was out there talking to tenants or, you know, prospective community members and saying, if you want to move in, I need you to sign up and, you know, come in and take a leap of faith with me.
Sure.
Because they didn't get to see the building yet. You know, they're doing tours and was like, there will be a wall here. They're going up ladders and, you know, in January and, and, you know, using their imagination in the middle of this construction site.
Cool.
Trust me. And so needless to say, the first 11 or so companies that were in, even before we opened our doors, they were really excited to come in. So,
all right.
So I said, okay, June 4th is when we get occupancy. And I tried to explain to them, occupancy means, like, it's like when you get occupancy from any other landlord. It doesn't mean that you're ready to move in. We still have to put furniture in and desks in, and there's still stuff that's going on. So Monday, June 4th, the fire marshal comes. He, checks off and gives us our occupancy permit at 5:30 in the morning. 7 o'clock, the security fences around the building that we had to have up until that occupancy permit came down, right? 8 o'clock, I took the hard hat off because now the occupancy permit was there. And at 8:30, I had my first company show up waiting for their keys.
Ha.
They wanted their keys. We did not yet have doors on the building.
Oh.
We did not yet have
desks.
We
don't need keys then.
We didn't have desks for them. We didn't have chairs for them. But they said it didn't matter. There was the first time that their company could work together in their company's space.
Huge milestone.
Right?
Huge
milestone. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They came in with laptops and they were in their open office, you know, 200 square foot open office space. All four of them, laptops out, you know, and boom, worked all day long.
Oh, I can tell you, when you start a business, you get in your own office versus your basement or garage or buddy's house or whatever it is. It's a whole new world.
Right.
Because just the dynamic changes for the positive.
Companies, all of a sudden, you could see them as like, we're a company.
Mm-hmm.
We're a real company. Mm-hmm. We're not just a project that we're doing.
Right. It's no longer a hobby, or it becomes on the verge of a living entity. Because it's got a location, right? Something on the verge of tangible.
People see them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing that I like seeing of almost all of our companies that are at Starting Blocks.
That's awesome.
Moving
that's
into their first space and really gaining the confidence that, they've got something.
All right. That's super cool. What is some advice that you'd give an entrepreneur that was just considering starting out right now?
I would say get connected to Starting Block.
Okay.
Really. I mean, we just do Intro to the Madison Startup Scene once a month. So
it
gives you like a really big picture overview of the lay of the land.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of company are you? What kind of resources are out there for you to go to based on whether you're a high growth company, a tech company, you know, that kind of aspect. So get started in the right track at the right space.
Mm-hmm.
And then, absolutely. I mean, that's what we try to serve to do is, you know, come in and tell us what you need, because ultimately, we're here to solve the gaps and the needs of the startup community in Madison. So tell us what we should be doing next.
That's awesome. That's super cool. Do you? So I have a few more questions for you, if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
These are more, I'm going to say questions geared towards you specifically. Do you read nonfiction? Anything?
Even
fiction is cool, right?
I do read.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Are you literate? Do you read books on a routine basis? How's that?
I haven't done as much reading as I like just because I've been so busy these
days.
Sure,
that's fair.
But absolutely.
Fair. Outside of legal documents or whatever you have to do when you're an attorney. Do you have a favorite book?
I would say, I have a favorite nonfiction book.
Fair.
That's To Kill a Mockingbird. But right now the book that I'm reading is Everybody Lies.
Interesting. So, I've never heard of that. Okay, tell me about it.
So it's a book that's talking about the power of why we lie and the purposes of it and the business purposes of it.
Sure.
And
I feel like we just killed a better part of an hour with non-truths. Okay, keep going. I'm sorry.
No. So it's sort of about the strategic roles that lies play in our community and in the business space specifically. So,
interesting. Yeah. All right. And is that your favorite, you said?
No, that's just the one that I'm reading right now.
The current read, okay, interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you learning like, I should have lied there, anything like that? Or what's the light bulb moment that you've had from that one?
I think it's to, because it's not really about, you know, teaching you to lie. I think it's about identifying truths.
Okay.
In the noise.
Ah, okay. Super fair. Super fair in the world that we live in now.
Yes.
That's information, podcasts everywhere. do you have a in regards to making decisions, do you have a path that you follow, or is it just by the gut? Or when you have to make a big decision, what do you do?
So I'm a pretty quick decision maker.
Okay.
But I am also a lawyer, and so I think one of the things that I do mm-hmm. when I'm in a group or even by myself is really have the ability to look at the problem from a bunch of different angles.
Okay.
And so once I'm through that process, mm-hmm. I tend to make a decision. You know, I find that it's fact gathering, and then I make a decision fairly quickly, depending sure. on the type of the decision.
Okay.
But I think that the most important thing in my decision-making process is, have I investigated all the angles?
Gotcha.
And I know a lot of people think, oh, yeah, we come down and I put out like a pros and a cons list.
Sure, well, the Ben Franklin, right?
Right, the yes and the no side. And I said, oh, that's really binary. That's two-sided. If you
Usually.
Really look at mm-hmm. complicated problems where you don't know where the answer is, you need to look at it from multiple angles, from mm-hmm. upside down. And it might be a multi-vectored type of pro, mm-hmm. con, yes, no. You know, it's not going to be that binary.
Right.
And I think that that's one of the things that I do consciously and intentionally before making a decision.
That's interesting you say that. I was just talking to my little brother, with Big Brothers Big Sisters, yeah. little brother. I was talking to him about negotiations, and he was considering taking an action. He's just graduated high school, whatever. And he was thinking of his perspective alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, you're 18, you're still living at home, and you've graduated. So if you're my kid, you'd get a boot, and you'd be out to go see the world and make your own life. But that's not happening. So I said, you got to consider what your mom, where she's at, what your grandma, your relatives, your friends. Look at their perspectives of what you got going on, the decisions that you're making, and see how that's affecting you, them, the world as a whole,
mm-hmm.
and just take into account more than just what you have going on. And we had this conversation. We took him through this whole process, and it was interesting because I did this thing where I was like, okay, I'm you, and then you're going to be your mom, and we're going to have this conversation, right? So he was the main idea was he's slacking in applying for colleges and didn't have a job yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just like, universally, you're slacking, right? I said, there's two types of people in the world. There's moochers and contributors. You're being a mooch. So it's time for you to be a contributor. So we're having this conversation back and forth where he's pretending to be his mom. I'm being him. And mom says, hey, have you looked for any jobs today? Nah. Right? Have you applied to college yet? Nah, I'll do it later. And we went through this conversation. And I finally said, I take that back. He said, as his mom, I think you got to get out of the house. And I was like, yes, he finally gets it, right? Somebody else's perspective beyond his own.
Right,
but
right.
But it took a little while for him to get to that point. And granted, he's 18, so he hasn't seen the whole world yet or anything like that.
Absolutely.
Not that any of us have.
Well, and there's other sort of examples and, you know, mechanisms that we can do this with. You know, there's mm-hmm. one called like six hat thinking where, you know, you have the black hat, the red hat, the green hat, the yellow hat. Each one of these are supposed to focus in on an angle of the problem. And so the black hat is always supposed to be the naysayer, right?
Okay.
And so instead of saying what your personal opinion is in a group when you're trying to come up with a problem, mm-hmm. you designate, okay, you're black hat. You're just supposed to shoot down ideas and be the naysayer. You're white hat. You're the advocate for this particular solution.
Okay.
Green hat, you're going to come at this from the financial side and just look at it from what the CPAs are going to think about it, right?
Sure.
Your goal is to make sure that is. And then, you know, I can't remember them all, but you know, like yellow hat is, okay, let's think about this intuitively from that intuitive side. And so you get different ways of role-playing to think about different problems.
I like
that. So I think that we integrate our own decision-making with a combination of all the ways we think, some more rationally, some, you know, more financially, some mm-hmm. more negative and pessimistic and optimistic. But to me, it's like, can you kind of do that in an integrated way with yourself, or if you can't do it with a group of people, to say, I want to make sure that we're really looking at this problem from all different angles.
Sure, that's clever.
Before we
arrive
at a solution.
It's called Six Hats?
I think it's called Six Hats.
Okay. Was that a book or anything? Or is it some...
It's a
webinar or something?
There's probably a book on it.
Okay. There's bound to be. Oh, that's awesome. So really quickly, what do you do to relax? Presuming they let you.
Generally, I am a big bike rider.
Are you really?
Yes.
You're in the right city.
So I am in the right city. In fact, when I moved from San Francisco to Madison, my husband and I got here via tandem bicycle riding.
Oh, really?
Yep.
That was a long ride.
It was a long ride, 54 days. So.
Wait, you're literally from California to...
Yep, California to Portland to Madison, Wisconsin on a tandem bicycle.
Holy cow.
So
that sounds like suicide to me.
It was awesome. It was awesome.
I'm just trying to, like, so many different directions, right? One, you're on a bike together. Two, you're with the same person for 54 days. That sounds terrible.
It was fantastic.
But you loved it. That's awesome.
I loved it. So I've been too busy this summer. I do not think we've been on our tandem once. I've been on my bicycle, but okay. We haven't actually been out for a long ride.
Gotcha. All right. Well, now you got to. We're all holding you committed as listeners to make sure that you get on your tandem bike ride, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You feel like you have to now. That's awesome. Is there anything else that you do?
I cook.
Okay.
I throw pizzas. I have a wood-fired pizza oven in my backyard.
Do you really? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's awesome.
So we throw pizzas with friends.
All right. So when are we coming over?
I rent children.
Did you say rent?
Yeah, I rent children. It's much easier to rent children than to actually have your own.
Oh, I wish I could have convinced my wife that, but that's okay.
Check them out. What age, which gender, what sure. do you need? Movie, zoo.
This one's crying. It's back.
Send them back.
Oh, that's awesome. High five there.
So.
I wish I had that. I don't. Yeah, maybe I didn't mean that, kind of, totally.
Your kids are going to hear that. I'm like, what?
I have one kid, that's plenty. I don't know how people do it with more than one. I am still trying to figure out how I do it with one. It's just a crazy world. So especially with the whole entrepreneurship thing, I can tell you, I used to network crazy night, day, morning, and Madison is a great place to do that.
Absolutely.
Endless. I guess it's something that I should not have done being in a relationship, right? Now you add a kid to that, nighttime networking is done.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't it's happen
hard.
Anymore.
It's real hard.
And so it just changes the dynamic. So now the idea of renting kids, though.
That's great.
That's there's something to be said for that. Cool. Well, thank you for joining us. This is
awesome.
Thank
you. It was a pleasure to be here.
I appreciate you being here and telling us all about the world of entrepreneurship and Starting Block.
Anytime. Anytime you want to have one of my companies come and do it, too, just let me know.
Awesome. I appreciate that. Where is Starting Block? Can you address or anything
Absolutely.
Like that?
We're at 821 East Washington Avenue, so we're right across from the new Festival Foods.
Nice. Okay, so 8 blocks from the Capitol.
8 blocks from the Capitol.
You're the best-looking building now in East Washington.
Absolutely.
So we'll
Absolutely.
Call it that way. This has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggles, stories, and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. I am James Kademan, business coach at Draw In Customers Business Coaching and author of the Bold Business Book, available on Amazon. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, and our guest, Chandra Miller of Starting Block. Thank you, Chandra, for joining
us. It's my pleasure.
This is awesome. Find us airing on 103.5 Wednesdays at 6 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m., as well as at sunprairiemediacenter.com for those website people. We can also be found morning, noon, and night at the podcast link on drawincustomers.com for even more of those website people. Thank you for listening. We will see you next week. I want you to stay awesome and enjoy your business.